All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday. Yay, it's Friday, April 15th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everybody. It is 55 degrees and sunny here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show, Regina Duggan brings DARPA to Google, now Facebook. We looked at Regina Duggan, who's one of what I call the unholy trinity between DARPA, Google, and Kurzweil, and how Regina Duggan has now moved over from her position at Google. She was in the ATAP division, developing moonshots, doing mobiles and wearables and battlefield mobile stuff. Who knows actually what she was doing? And now is going over to Facebook to work on some of their new projects. And I gotta tell you, there's been a flurry of news since yesterday about this. And what's absolutely amazing is that they think it's funny to put, you know, Facebook is taking over the world in the title. And some of these articles, like it's a joke, just like Google was taking over the world. But it's the people they put into place and the technologies they're working on. We read yesterday that Zuckerberg is really going to push now this 3D virtual reality. That's one of the things that Regina Duggan is supposed to work on, as well as this artificial intelligence. And those are two things that she's had a lot of experience with. I mentioned this yesterday, but I thought this was interesting. Just like when the brain implants first were ready for prime time after DARPA had been working on it and sprinkling all their venture funding capital at the universities that were working on making the stretchable electronics, they had to get that into the public eye. And so National Geographic did live brain surgery, implanting a chip to help some poor patient with Parkinson's disease. It was the same exact technology they were working with to help control PTSD and things in soldiers. Well, I see a story. This is from the 13th, so 2 days ago. Now we have everybody, Microsoft and Facebook included, launching their own version of 3D goggles. We have that VR Pornhub released all the free VR porn. Well, now we have Watch the World's First 360-degree VR surgery live on Thursdays. This must have been yesterday. Wonder how the surgery went. Hope the guy made it. You know, and this 360-degree VR, guess what? Was that not what we were just reading about with Zuckerberg? And some of the new technologies that they just rolled out at that Facebook 8 conference or whatever it was called that was going on this week. Let's see. It says you can watch it free. Mr. Shafi, so this is the story. VR operations. It's all about stitch them up, not shoot them up. So is this supposed to be normalizing with reality TV that VR goggles and brain surgery are normal, and this is like the way of the future? Because this is what they're really pushing. They want you to see it in action. How wonderful it is. Mr. Shaif Ahmed, consultant general, colorectal and laparoscopic surgery at Barts NHS Trust, was in the news for bringing his craft a good deal closer to the gaze of his medical students by donning his Google glasses. Oh, he removed tumors from the liver and the bowel of a 78-year-old British man, and he allowed 13,000 trainees and clinicians to witness a surgeon's eye view of the procedure as it happens. Now the streaming surgeon is going live again. So that first time was in 2014. This must just be the way, like, they decided to put it out there in front of everybody, and then you can't say you never saw it. The Royal London Hospital's operating theater, with the surgery at center stage, will be available for all to see live in virtual reality at lunchtime on Thursday, April 14th. So like I said, it was yesterday. On the day, anyone with compatible iOS or Android mobile or a tablet will be able to immerse themselves in the cut and thrust of 21st century surgery. I'm surprised they didn't have nanobots involved. The streaming content isn't exclusive to the app and will be available to view directly from the website of Medical Realities, the company that is driving this unique event. Yeah, and hear the name of that, Medical Realities. So reality TV for medicine. If the 360-degree demo footage is anything to go by, then it was going to be quite an eyeful. Audio and video will be captured using a Matty Vision system. Surprised that they didn't have an Oculus Rift logo on it. Zuckerberg missed a big advertising opportunity. Matty Vision is better known for delivering immersive entertainment from live concerts. This is some of the stuff that I was telling you about. Keep your eyes open because this is all coming in 2016. Matty Vision is better known for delivering immersive entertainment from live concerts, and its clients include Guns N' Roses, Axemen, Slash, British rock group Muse, Samsung for its S7 launch, and indeed, the sort of content goes down a treat with Samsung Gear VR goggles. Now, Samsung, interesting that it's Samsung. Samsung Gear VR goggles. Talked about Samsung. They have a lot of connections to our military technical complex. Samsung has their own military division. We found out that they had been working with Regina Duggan on some of her mobile stuff back at DARPA. Interesting that they are rolling out these VR goggles. Samsung is also the one that has that big robotics factory in South Korea that's building all of the automation robots for Chinese factories to put Chinese workers out of jobs. So, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And Samsung have been working on a lot of the smart appliances and some of the Internet of Things stuff with Eric Schmidt and Google as well. Anyway, for a live gig setup, Matavision typically operates three of its cameras, and then there might be a couple used during the surgery, but apparently only one will be viewable during the streaming. Medical Realities is a collaborative venture that was founded in London by Shafi Ahmed and AR/VR evangelist Steve Dan, and draws upon a mix of clinical, educational, and CGI authoring talent. What on earth is CGI authoring talent? The company hasn't always relied on Matavision cameras and has produced its own 360-degree surgical content, which was captured with a rig using GoPro cameras in the operating room. The main difference here being that stitching wasn't performed in real time. There are several examples of this work on Medical Realities YouTube channel, and you don't need the VROR app to view this content. While these videos capture the operating theater environment, there is a fair bit of burnout in the area where the surgery takes place, but you can still make out what's going on by turning the view, by turning to view the monitor. Well, I don't want to hear details. I wanted to hear, like, and this just goes on and on. Blood and guts, the cut and thrust of online surgery. Like, what on earth? Who? I mean, I could see maybe for a medical student, you could attend some sort of rare operation or whatever that they were doing and see exactly what they are working on. But this is just beyond insane, and of course you know that what they're trying to do, and here I see it right here. My view is that if you want technology to be a part of healthcare, you make that change yourself. You control it and you show it which way to go. And that's really what it is. We know that healthcare is one of the big pushes for this mad science gone mad technology we talk about every day. The medical industrial complex and this closing in of the top of the bag as they bag and tag every cell in our bodies, as they swab DNA, and they work on the genome, and they splice and dice and mix them in the lab to see what kind of chimeras they can come up with and what kind of organs they can grow or 3D print to then transplant using VR goggles and stream live over reality TV. It's just beyond insane, but it wants you to see the wonders, to buy in. You could be the next star. You could be the next reality healthcare TV star. We'll even give you your operation for half price if you go on live TV. I don't know. Having had separate meetings with Apple, Google, and Microsoft, Ahmed declares that while these companies have the technology, they need input from the people, such as healthcare professionals, to show what can be done with it. They want us to challenge it and move it on, and it's actually up to all of us to use it. To sit back and go, oh, I'm not going to change. Well, you're going to be forced to change at some stage. And ding, 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 ding. You know, I'm sure there's all kinds of traditional doctors out there say they don't want to do this. But you know what? They're going to force everybody to change. That's what he says. You're going to be forced to change at some point. The cost of admission is cheaper. It's what patients want, and it's going to be happening within the next 5 to 10 years, regardless. His vision extends into primary care, and again, it's all about connectivity. Here we go. This is the electronic health records and tying you into your medical dossier. It's all about connectivity, sharing knowledge and lowering costs, and a way of dealing with the lack of beds in the hospital is to keep the patients in the community and manage their needs using telemedicine. Ding, ding. Again, something we've talked about a lot of times is being able to monitor you remotely. And, you know, yesterday when we were reading about wearables, the brand new wearables that the Jekyll project that Regina Duggan had been working on over in her ATAP program at Google has morphed out. First they had started with like Levi's or something, but now it's morphed out where they can weave antennas into your clothing and make them do all kinds of things. And one of the things they talked about is how that would enable us to have 24/7 the clothing giving us some sort of biometric information to make it your superpower, as well as being able to send that information real time to your doctor. So if it notices that there is a problem, or if it notices that your heart rate is elevated or your sugar numbers are up or whatever, it can alert somebody. And, you know, we'll take a look at this a little bit later, but I saw two stories now, and, you know, we kind of talked about it. I know they were talking about them coming in the future when good old Tommy Insel, the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, we've talked about him a lot of times, moved over to Google. Yes, he did. Mental health is going to be something Google works on. But we talked about many times before, in the future, them having a smart application to diagnose mental disorders on your smartphone. And, you know, Tom Insel had said that that was the kind of the future of mental health care, be able to do diagnosis remotely, because there are so many different telltale traits that they are now discovering as they do brain research inside and out with this brain project, where they have tells. You know, schizophrenia was a big one. They can tell just by how disjointed your sentences are within a certain period of time whether or not you're having an episode. I saw a new one yesterday. Now they can diagnose you with depression. But even before you know you're depressed, because not only is your smart device, whether it be your phone or your clothing or whatever you have now is the Internet of Things that's bagging, tagging, and tracking you, they could tell as they watch your patterns whether or not you're deviating from those patterns. And by deviating from those patterns means something's going on. So as they then collect more information, like where you go or what you search online or what you talk to your friends about using your speech recognition application, they can determine whether or not you're having a pre-depression episode. That's like, and then send you information or links or phone numbers or alert authorities to let them know that Bobby isn't doing too well today and it might be time to send the medevac drone. Or just push the button, let the little nanobots that are already inside his body, this is a little bit in the future, maybe, release some of those dopamine producing drugs. Or suggest, actually, even better, because I don't know, we're going to give him dopamine producing drugs. That might be illegal. But we could suggest, Johnny, if you're feeling depressed, here, your friendly cell phone companion that's going to be with you 24/7 for all you codependent people. We've made codependent on technology over the last 30 years. We're going to suggest that you pull out the joystick and start playing some video games to push those dopamine buttons to get you over that depression hump. Johnny and Bobby, and both of you, on the couch now. I mean, I see that happening. Like you said, I saw a story yesterday talking about something very similar to that. Maybe they weren't telling you to go sit on the couch, but they were already talking about them knowing that you're having an episode long before you do. All right, let's finish up with these VR telemedicine goggles. So, yes, telemedicine, being able to bag and tag you and send your information to your doctor and monitor you at all times. Your Fitbit isn't going to be the only thing anymore. It's going to be right in your clothes. Of course, also the one thing I wanted to mention while we were reading about the wearables yesterday, being able to monitor you real time. An announcement came out at the very bottom from Ashton Carter, Secretary of the Department of Defense, saying that they were just so excited about this because this is one of their big projects. And this new institute, the Advanced Functional Fabrics of America, is working together with 50 universities and industrial partners, as well as the Department of Defense. So, I mean, it came right out of DARPA. There is no doubt about that. And good old Regina Duggan was the dotted line that connected that to everything. All right, anyway, back to these VR goggles and telemedicine. Ahmed has been working with Advanced Medical Applications, which is an Ubisoft company whose expert eye mobile systems has found uses in advising paramedics on the scene of emergencies, as well as less critical outpatient monitoring. Now, what's interesting, Ubisoft, if I'm not mistaken, Ubisoft is another gaming company. And we just saw NVIDIA, when we were looking at supercomputing in an AI with deep learning, NVIDIA was a graphics card processor manufacturer. Actually, they make graphics cards, but they're known for their processors. And they are now utilizing NVIDIA to do a lot of the supercomputing for AI. NVIDIA is becoming a bigwig in this new AI military industrial collaboration that is happening. Ubisoft being a game manufacturer. So if you think about it, we started way, way back when. When I told you guys that now, at the time it was 18 years, probably 21 years now, when I worked in distribution, and it was back in the early days, we were the back end to any e-commerce computer stuff that you bought online. There was one place that sold it to those resellers, and it was us. So I saw everything. Every computer electronic product that came out, it was skewed up on my system. And the day that the Department of Defense skewed up the first person flight simulators, I absolutely 100% remember that day because a couple friends and I were like, what? Why is the Department of Defense listed as the company that is selling this product? They were listed as the manufacturer. And it makes a lot of sense now because fast forward now 18 to 20 years into the future. And what do we have? We have an entire generation of good drone pilots. An entire generation of kids that have been sucked into this alter reality. An entire generation of children that have been taught not to pay attention to what is going on outside, the corruption that's going on, the ripping the fixtures off the walls and chucking them in the truck out the back door, driving off to go sell them on eBay to squeeze the last of what's left out of America. They've been taught not to pay attention to any of that, but to only pay attention to the box. Now, the news, the TV was something before. I mean, you figured the 50s, starting the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, I mean, we were all taught to believe the TV. But with video games, that brought a whole new level because it didn't have to be stark reality. It didn't have, reality television happened, right? That was kind of like that little transition. We've talked about this before. I'll never forget when reality TV first started. And people were just so emotionally involved in these other dumbasses' lives. And a lot of this wasn't even real. It was just bullshit they were making up on TV. But see, this was all a psychological experiment to see how you respond to things. I read a study the one time, and I think I mentioned this a few times, about how psychologically they discovered that when people were watching reruns of their favorite shows, let's say, that they had watched for years, their brain responds in a way, in the same way, chemically, as it would if you were spending time with somebody you loved or a good friend. Now, how bizarre is that? That you're reacting the same way that you would, chemically speaking, in your brain, just by watching a fictional character on television, as long as it was something you enjoyed. And so they discovered long ago that this manipulation, you know, there's all kinds of other things they discovered using the flashes of light and whatever. This has been a big mental experiment for a lot of years. I still blame it, a lot of it, on Bernays. Bernays and the Nazi scientists from Operation Paperclip. You know, this has been a tool for a very long time to get inside people's heads and manipulate. And it's not like any of us don't know that. But the whole transition to video games, to be able to desensitize you to things, shoot them up, rape, steal, rob, pillage, you know, we've trained our children well to be good little delinquents. And then let's get them on the first-person shooters, first-person flyers. So now we can make them into good soldiers in the battlefield 18 to 20 years from now. And now let's get them in the VR goggles. And this is where this next step of sucking us totally into the Matrix, wanting us to go into the machine, wanting us to become a part of the Internet of Things. And I've said it a lot of times, but I'm going to warn you again, don't get any of this technology near your eye or your temples or your ears. We found out those dopamine headphones, we should find out if those are released yet. I really want to see what happens once those come out. Those dopamine headphones that are being released this month use a little bit of electrical stimulation right next to your ear to stimulate the vagus nerve to start producing dopamine in your brain. I mean, it doesn't need to be an electrode implanted into your skull for them to be able to start manipulating brain chemicals. We also saw yesterday that with some of this mind control, being able to mind control devices, because they're working on that, of course, again, soldiers coming back from Afghanistan, paralyzed or brain injured. They started with the brain implants. And now they've come up with a way to be able to capture your brain waves and have you control devices. Ironically enough, the video that Pigmind posted a couple days ago about how they've perfected now this new technology for Mind Control Electronics was showing a paralyzed gentleman, and I don't know if he was a veteran or not. I'm assuming he was, but I saw another one about a guy who had an accident on the beach, so I don't know if that was the same guy or not, or if he was a vet. But regardless, I mean, I've seen so much research over the last few years of them with the brain implant and this mind control of electronic devices. I mean, this is the next step of them being able to merge us into the machine, and it's all done in the name of helping those poor people. Poor people with issues, you know, we have to make sure we help them so they can create music. I saw another guy, paralyzed guy, now play his guitar with his mind. And my cousin is paralyzed from the waist down, you know what, since we were kids. So I totally understand. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. If you haven't walked in 30 years, you know, that's the one thing that you want to do. But on the other hand, just be careful not to let it pull your heartstrings for you to say this is such great technology that I'm going to step right up and get it myself to augment myself or whatever, because there are nefarious reasons that this is being done. This isn't being done to help you or me or the poor people who have all these problems, because they're just such wonderful people. Just like yesterday, 2 days ago, GlaxoSmithKline getting rid of all their patents and poor nations on drugs so they can produce cheap generic drugs isn't all about because GlaxoSmithKline wants to be philanthropic to the poor third world nations. You know, I'm sure that because the biologics, some of the new stuff is the hot new thing, and those are going to keep the patents. Sure, some of this other stuff is going to be used for guinea pig trials of some kind. Who knows? You know, the swallowable, a little electronic chip inside the pill. You know, that was another thing. The swallowable doctor and being able to bag, tag, and track. Who's to say they're not going to put some sort of nano in these new generic drugs that they're going to give to all these third world nations at low cost? You know, you don't know what they're going to do, but be careful what is given away for free or is given away at a discount, especially if it was very expensive in the past or only available to a few select in the labs, a few select who were desperate and dying. Because a lot of time it's because they're expanding the human trials, except you don't know it's a human trial because the 21st Century CARES Act, I mean, God forbid, that FDA, pesky FDA, is holding back all this great new technology because, damn them, they want to assess it for safety. We, you know what? There's people dying, for God's sake. You know, that's what the senator said at one time on this video we watched, where they're pushing this 21st Century CARES Act that's sitting now in front of Congress. Damn the FDA. The FDA was standing in the way of medical innovation, and there's people who could use this stuff right now. So, hey, let's screw the testing. Let's screw the safety testing. Let's get it into clinical trials. And then let's do a case study. Because you know what? If you're dead and dying, and I mean, I can kind of see it. Absolutely. If you have tried everything else and you don't have much of a chance, and your only chance is some sort of clinical trial, well, then most people go for it as a last, you know, last-ditch effort to see if they could do something. But that's like chasing ambulances, okay? There's ethical and moral issues, at least from my perspective there. I mean, if I'm developing a technology that I'm going to make bazillions of dollars of profit on, and especially a technology that was paid for with DARPA-sprinkled tax dollars at universities and developed in a mad science lab and then rolled out, oh, look how happy and friendly, in some new startup company that the scientists created, some new startup shell. And now they need to show proof of concept, that's what they call it, do a case study and do some nice glossy photos. Do some, hey, live VR surgery. Look at these nice close-up photos. That's how they sell it. Then they put it in a nice advertising package, play the commercials on TV, direct to consumer. Now you can have your own cure for toenail fungus with the touch of a button. I don't know. You know, it just, when you look at the whole big ugly picture, the way the mad science is going to meet consumeristic society and opening your arms to inviting in the machine, because it's playing on our instant gratification, narcissistic society the technology has created. It's going to make you younger. It's going to make you live forever. Something all the tech titans are funding and working on. Longevity projects everywhere. I was just reading something about Kurzweil. I went down a few paths yesterday after the show, and says he takes some crazy cocktail every day of like 110 or 130 vitamins or something to try and stay young. That's insane. I don't know. I used to go on my kick, and I have to say I did feel a lot better back when I was doing my vitamin regimen. I did probably about 20 a day. But I got to tell you, after swallowing 20 vitamins, it really sucked, and it was hard. And doing that on a daily basis, I don't know, got old after a while. Anyway, let's finish this story about these Ubisoft. Is this Ubisoft? Ubisoft. Ahmed, this is the surgeon, has been working with American Medical Applications, an Ubisoft company whose Expert Eye mobile system has found uses in advising paramedics on the scene of emergencies, as well as less critical outpatient monitoring, like at your home where they're begging and tagging you, or at some little remote clinic. It's all the wonders of telemedicine. In the community, you put the glasses on a district nurse or on a physician, and they look at the condition, and then they can type and communicate with a whole load of specialists in the hospital, chat with specialists, get some advice on dermatology, chronic wounds, or general management of the patients themselves. You can do it remotely instead of, say, admit to A&E or go to casually to be admitted, waste a bed and waste money. We can save, but not by compromising healthcare. Saving money and delivering on clinical needs for the patients in the UK, so the story is in the UK, is only a small part of the prize for Ahmed, as he envisages remote training and advice being available to developing countries where access to safe, affordable surgery and anesthesia is limited or non-existent. And, you know, we talked about that a long time ago. That's one of the big things about telemedicine and third world nations. You know, they want to get internet everywhere. Well, it'd be a good reason to get internet everywhere. And they even talk about it here. Look at the dark red, the areas that are poor and that don't have access to health care. We are penetrating the areas of concern just by using a smart device, a simple 3G connection and nothing else. So you can see the value of technology in the workplace. And imagine Google Loon. Yes, that was the internet balloons flying all over the continent of Africa, India. They're putting them everywhere they can where they don't have proper wiring, providing Wi-Fi access to remote parts of Africa, South America, and Asia. And suddenly now the world becomes a smaller place as we suck everybody else into the machine. And that's what we think about exponential medicine. And again, that exponential, that's what Kurzweil talks about. And that's one of the reasons why what is happening right now is so dangerous, because it's not happening on a linear timeline. This is happening exponentially. So in advance, just saw something the other day, and it said something in the past that had taken 25 years of progress for us to get there is now happening in less than 2 years. It's about to get faster. As our computing power, our deep learning, and AI all starts to advance and get closer to the human brain, and they start to crack all of these mysteries, this is going to happen faster and faster every single day. Speaking of that, I've mentioned IBM Watson quite a number of times and some of his work that he's been doing with the Sloan Kettering Cancer Institute in Ohio. Well, this just came out of Fortune magazine. IBM and the American Cancer Society want to create the ultimate cancer advisor. So we now have Watson as your cancer doctor. It is intended to help patients through the course of their treatment. IBM and the American Cancer Society are now launching a new partnership that will combine the power of Big Blue's cognitive computing platform, i.e. Watson, with the wealth of cancer research and patient support services provided by the not-for-profit organization. And I'm just going to mention this. Something that's interesting is that you see now any of the stories that are coming out about nanobots are all about putting nanobots in your blood loaded with a payload to be able to cure cancer. So today it's Watson offering you advice on your treatment. Tomorrow it's going to be Watson offering you advice on getting the tiny little robots to swim into your blood and provide you the cancer payload. We'll look at that one next. Anyway, let's get back to good old Watson. The Watson Health Initiative was announced just this past Tuesday by, yes, that creepy lady CEO Ginni Rometty of IBM at the 13th Annual World Healthcare Congress, a meeting that gathers top executives from health and life science companies to discuss the biggest issues affecting the industry. The two organizations will combine forces now to create a service that will provide cancer patients, survivors, and caregivers personalized access to vetted cancer resources. Yes, God forbid the internet is not a reliable source of any information, and so Watson is going to vet the resources and feed them to you. Watson has read reams of oncology literature, but this phase is now about learning all the cancer advocacy literature and how to support cancer patients, survivors, and caregivers in this journey. More than 1.6 million Americans are diagnosed with cancer each year, and the patients are hungry for accurate, useful information that is specific to their disease. American Cancer Society has collated over 14,000 pages of vetted, detailed information across more than 70 cancer topics, as well as risk reduction and early detection information, most of it currently accessible on cancer.org. Watson will ingest this information, yes, ingest it and then digest it, and link it to the Watson Health Cloud. Now remember, again, the Watson Health Cloud, the cloud of so many things. We've talked about your data being in the cloud, your personal data being in the cloud, your medical data being in the cloud, and then some of the learning clouds that are happening with this deep learning AI, Baxter Robot being able to learn and upload what it learned to the cloud, and all the other Baxter Robots able to access that learning of the one robot. Watson will ingest this information and link it to the Watson Health Cloud, a secure collection of de-identified, so don't worry about it, we can't identify you, patient data. It will also use all of that knowledge as the foundation for the health advisor, which will be able to respond directly and personally to a user. No internet searching necessary. No, that internet full of lies per Bill Clinton. For example, say a woman was diagnosed with late stage breast cancer and she has already decided with her doctor on a treatment path, but is now experiencing extreme pain after her first round of chemotherapy. She could turn to a health advisor to ask in natural language if this pain is normal. The advisor would be designed to use the wealth of data within Watson to compare to other women with similar characteristics and then provide details on standard symptoms and self-management options particular to her stage in the disease and treatment. It may tell her that the pain is normal, but anything extreme should be reported to her doctor. And over time, the advisor may also learn that she prefers group support sessions over individual health coaching and blah, 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 blah. You know, what I think about when I start reading all this telemedicine is something that they had talked about when we first found out about nanobots being able in the future to repair bodily issues and detect and destroy long before you even know you have a tumor. They were pushing this to be like a Star Trek doctor for when we hit the stars and start traveling to other planets. Because there's not going to be too many space doctors out there. And how are they going to fix you? So if they start databasing all this information in the cloud on brain surgeries and cancers and 3D VR goggles showing how they do all this stuff and making all that information available to be able to then give someone access to remotely, I could see how that could be pretty interesting. I also saw, you know, they've been working with robotic surgeons doing surgeries using scalpels with a robot. I don't know. I remember there were a couple in the very beginning that went a little awry. There was one with a lawsuit. But, you know, in the future, some of these big paid narcissist surgeons are not going to have jobs, these cancer doctors, because there's not going to be anything for them to do except sit at a desk in a room with their VR goggles on and answer questions from people around the globe who seem to need help with nurses or what do they call them? Physician's assistants doing the work, the hands-on work. And eventually it might even be some sort of robotic assistant on the other side. This is what socialized medicine's all about. Do more with less. Let's put everybody out of jobs. Says by pairing the patient-centric new advisor with the clinician-focused platform, IBM envisions a full-circle approach to cancer treatment. Watson technology would first help the doctor make a clinical treatment decision, and then the doctor can switch over to a healthcare advisor option to share information on localized cancer services like volunteer transportation options. Well, okay. Keep your eye on that. Because Watson has been doing some back-end healthcare for a while now. And that Ginny, IBM CEO, has been talking about it for a long time. They partner with that Under Armour underwear to be able to monitor your bio signs, your sweat, your heartbeat, do your Fitbit stuff. And eventually, you know, they've already been talking about doing remote diagnostics, biosensing. And that's a lot of stuff that's already out there. You know, it's going to be real-time surveillance of you completely, all in the name of this medical, healthcare, industrial, military complex. These tiny robots swimming in your blood are going to save your life. Researchers have tricked cancer cells into eating balls full of poison, killing the cells and effectively treating breast cancer in a bunch of mice, says a new report and journal published on March 14th. These little miracle balls are called, nanoparticles, and they could be the key to finding, diagnosing, and treating a number of illnesses in the future. Think of nanoparticles as little delivery trucks, and they can be loaded with almost anything from a medical lab, a medicine, a fluorescent agent, or in this case, a poison. Ding! But these delivery trucks are tiny. And actually, tiny isn't the right word. The screws on your glasses are tiny. The pebbles that get stuck in your shoes are tiny. A grain of sand is still tiny and 5,000 times bigger than the largest nanoparticle. Nanoparticles are small enough to breach the blood-brain barrier, which is the blockade in your head that keeps bacteria and, oh, little nanobots out of your brain as well as other cellular refuse. And if you can move drugs through that blood-brain barrier, well, then you can treat a new host of diseases and do things in the brain. Nanomaterials help the delivery of drugs, says Tom Webster, president of the U.S. Society for Biomaterials and the chair of the Chemical Engineering Department of Northeastern University's College of Engineering, in a phone interview. If a pharmaceutical company has developed a drug to treat cancer, what we have done in the nanomaterial community is help carriers for that drug so it can target specific cells and then release that drug to the cell. Now, a few days ago, we looked at them not only creating new molecules with their 3D printer, but also 3D printing drugs. And they had talked about in the future being able to have little drug manufacturing plants in some sort of nanobot inside your body to be able to produce drugs on demand someday and deliver them to the site where they are required. I mean, this is beyond insanity. I just hope that either we get an EMP or I'm long gone before this stuff is like full frontal, because I don't want any part of this at all. And we looked yesterday as well at some of the research DARPA was doing. They had that A2P program, the atoms to product building from a nanoscale up until they created something like a real-life replicator. And they had another program, I'm trying to remember what it was called, where they were creating an artificial immune system with the tips, I think. They were little tippy tips. And what it did was it scanned your immune system and acted like a, you know, here it is, co-evolving antiviral. It acted like T cells or white blood cells and a virus where it infected your cells, but it sat dormant until it found something that it didn't recognize, and then it mounted an attack. And after it mounted the attack and went back to normal, it could then mutate, morph, shapeshift. That's what they said. Shapeshift to be able to morph just like the viruses do, ideally to outpace evolving pathogens, a therapy or vaccine would adapt in real time, shapeshifting as fast as its targets do. And to pursue that radical approach, DARPA has launched its interfering and co-evolving prevention therapy, also known as Intercept. Technology will be the doom of the human race. And people such as Stephen Hawking have been warning about that for a long time. Stephen Hawking came out the other day, and actually the killer robots thing was probably a few months ago. Hawking came out with Elon Musk and even Bill Gates, which I don't think Billy's worried about that in one bit at all, about autonomous robots, autonomy in the machine and AI and being able to make their own decisions and even say no now, right? They're teaching machines to say no if they second guess us and think that their conclusion was better than ours. They're not going to follow our commands. Stephen Hawking warns humanity, leave Earth before the ruling class destroys it. And, you know, he said we got at least another 100 years before we can get off this rock. And at the rate we're going, it's not going to turn out too well for us in the next 100 years. So we better slow down in what we're releasing and letting go so we don't screw it up before we get off this rock. This is out of Claire Burnett's new publication, undergroundreporter.org. Oh, they shared it from the anti-media. Humanity's future is in peril thanks to the so-called advancements in science and technology, claims Stephen Hawking, who, of course, cited nuclear war, global warming, and genetically modified viruses as deadly threats to our existence. And, yeah, that's something else we looked at was the DIY gene editing kits, CRISPR technology, and mad science all over the globe. They're sending CRISPR out to whoever and anyone who wants it to be able to do DIY gene editing in their basement, garage, or parents' back room in New York City, no less. How long is it going to be before somebody crosses something with something else that ends up not being too good for the human race and gets out, since we're not using any type of standard biohazard? And even if we were, the Department of Defense, the Dugway Proving Grounds, where they had all that anthrax that they shipped out that wasn't quite killed, or the CDC with the smallpox vials sitting for 30 years on top of a filing cabinet unprotected, hey, you know, or Plum Island, Plum Island that they're in the process of moving off the island, off the mainland coast, and putting it right into the heartlands in Manhattan, Kansas, in the middle of Tornado Alley. Yes, those pathogens. Don't worry about it. Hawkins described various things that could go wrong to an audience of hundreds attending his first series of BBC Wright lectures, which pertained to research about black holes. He asserted the necessary for colonization on other planets to ensure the survival of the human species. According to the BBC, Hawkins cautioned that although the chance of a disaster to planet Earth in a given year might be quite low, it adds up over time and becomes a near certainty in the next 1,000 or 10,000 years. But by that time, we should have spread out into space and two other stars. So a disaster on Earth would not mean the end of the human race. However, we will not establish self-sustaining colonies in space, at least for the next 100 years. So we better be very careful in this period. And, you know, they are working. I just saw recently that the United States has announced that they are discontinuing their support for the International Space Station. And they're going to start dedicating their resources toward creating a moon base as a jump point to creating some sort of colonization on Mars. But I still ask why, since 1967, we started going into space, why there is no Disney World on the moon yet? Because, I mean, you know, if you look at the way the United States is, you look at the way we commercialize everything and spend money, if all that were really true, if we had really done all this and space flight wasn't just something that was done on TV to make us look like we were the world's superpowers, I think that we would have already been doing trips to the moon. You know, they talked about the Playboy Mansion in space. They saw that part of this, whose rocket was it? Was it Elon Musk's SpaceX rocket that just took off this past week? Delivered not only supplies to the International Space Station, but also an inflatable hotel that they attached to the side of the International Space Station. And at some point in the future, people are going to be able to go up and visit. I mean, how insane is that? So, I mean, you know, we commercialize and cannibalize everything. And I don't know, 100 years to get off this rock seems kind of slow considering it's not that far away. Anyway, it would seem kind of productive for such a well-respected scientist to decry scientific progress as humanity's most existential threat. But this isn't the first time Hawking has advised us to exercise caution. Last summer, of course, theoretical physicist was among over 1,000 artificial intelligence experts who signed the open letter about weaponization of robots in the ongoing military artificial intelligence arm race among the world's military powers. And it's not just the artificial intelligence arm race. It is the biological mad science gone mad race as well. In October of last year, Hawking warned scientists at the European Center for Nuclear Research, i.e. CERN, about the potential for the Higgs boson God particle to also initiate catastrophic vacuum decay. Well, yeah, CERN's another one of those mad science projects since 2008, I believe. Ever since the world started to go completely insane and they fired that puppy up. He warned about the Higgs boson God particle to initiate catastrophic vacuum decay, the formation of a quantum bubble that expands at the speed of light and it could decimate our entire universe. Concerns over the automation of the world's workforce coupled with capitalist greed also earned the scientists stern alarm, and in fact, taken collectively, Hawking's numerous warnings are aimed directly at the careless hubris, my exact words, of the ruling elites and their tendency to act in favor of profits in a variety of fields. Yes, and they're all disruptive technologies without any consideration given to long-term consequences resulting from such hastily implemented projects, right? Don't test anything. Let's let it out in the wild. Let's play with all of these microbes where we could push a button per the DARPA lady and create life on demand. What could go wrong? In fact, despite numerous cautionary scenarios Hawking has proffered, he claims society will likely discover a means to cope. Yeah. We're not going to stop making progress or even reverse it. So get off it, Jules, because you're not changing anything, apparently. So we have to recognize what the dangers are and control them. He says, I am an optimist, but it is important to ensure that these changes are headed in the right direction. And in a democratic society, this means that everyone needs to have a basic understanding of science to make informed decisions about the future. And that's the problem. There is no informed consent because they're just selling it to you. But they're not talking about all the things, all the dangers that you're putting yourself in the way of by being a guinea pig. All right, I guess. We should look at the very last thing. Stephen Hawking, a billionaire Russian, wants to build an interstellar spaceship. And yeah, Russian billionaires again. There was another one involved in the 2045 project. Last year, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence got a major boost when Russian billionaire Yuri Milner unveiled a $100 million effort to scan the skies for radio and light signals emitted by aliens. Not content to simply sit tight and wait for ET, Milner now plans to build interstellar spacecrafts. And in a joint announcement at the One World Observatory in New York City today, and this was just a few days ago, Milner and Stephen Hawking have now unveiled a breakthrough Starshot, a $100 million research and engineering program seeking to lay the foundations for an eventual interstellar voyage. The very first craft can travel at relativistic speeds. The program involves building light-propelled nanocrafts that can reach up to 20% the speed of light, and the robotic spacecrafts would pass Pluto in 3 days and reach our neighboring star system, Alpha Centauri, in just 20 years. So here we go, guys. Stephen Hawking is telling us we better start getting off this rock, Jack, because shit is getting bad. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It is Friday. Lonnie Clark is live up next. All kinds of great radio tonight, this afternoon. Josh live at 6, 11 o'clock, Antimedia. And I will catch up to you on Monday. Everybody take care.